Here's your host, Rob Young.
Now it's time to introduce our guests. You know, we always try to bring you the best of the best. And we have two of them tonight. Mindy Mejia, who's been a friend and much more since for a long time. She used to be my accountant. And Kerry Griffith. Kerry is really interesting. He is the only person, the only writer I know who managed to turn a rattlesnake into a hero. In his most recent book, Rattlesnake Bluff, which will be available for you, is the fifth in his series, the Sam Rivers series. Sam Rivers is a special investigator for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, a rather interesting protagonist. Kerry got his love for the outdoors and his knack for writing eco-mysteries by growing up in the fields and the streams of northern Iowa. He also writes nonfiction in addition to the Sam Rivers series. His most recent nonfiction book, Gunflint Falling, it's a story of the big blowdown up in the around the Gunflint Trail. Marvelous book. And that hopefully will also be available for you tonight. He looks at life, and his books reflect the fact that he is very involved psychologically and emotionally in the flora and fauna of this world that we live in. And his mysteries reflect that. Sitting next to him is Mindy Mejia. She's been here so many times, and I've introduced her so many times, I don't know what to say anymore, other than that her books keep getting better and better and better. She was just here last April, I think. February was quizzing Josh Moling, then a newly minted USA Today bestseller, is everybody's favorite conversation partner, I think. Her book, The World of Hurt, which is not her most recent book, was nominated for the prestigious Sue Grafton Memorial Award presented by Mystery Writers of America, honoring the best in historical mystery fiction. So, congratulations. That's a big deal. Tomorrow is the official launch of her next book, The Whisper Place. I was blessed to get an advance copy of that and read it. It was a great book. As I said before, how can a face this sweet write like that? I did not know until I read the article in Sunday's Minneapolis or Minnesota now, Star Tribune, that you had written a book while in grade school, or a story in grade school, killing your mother. You can ask her about that. I'm not going to go into that. But you get the idea of what she writes now. Anyway, Whisper Place is a great book. I can see an Anthony nomination or an Edgar nomination in your future. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm welcome to Mindy Mejia and Kerry Griffith.
Thank you very much for coming tonight. I really appreciate it. It's a nice crowd, I think. we'll see. Talk to me afterwards. And I just want to, just one word out there to people who are here tonight, because I promised I would pay for your dinner if you showed up. That was a joke. Okay, so that's not going to happen tonight. I just wanted to give a shout out to Rob tonight too, because we're coming up to the third anniversary. This is totally Minnesota Mystery Night is his brainchild, and he is the brawn behind it. He puts together the people that come up here tonight, and we as writers really appreciate the work that he does. So thank you very much, Rob. Really appreciate that. Finally, Mindy Mejia agreed to come up with me tonight. I don't know why. Now that I found out she murdered her mother, I don't know. But, you know, to any of you writers out there, if you want to get somebody as good as Mindy up here to talk to you about your book, this is how you go about it. First of all, you contact them 18 months in advance. And, you know, she can't very well say, hey, I'm busy that night. You know, so, but she has graciously agreed to come here tonight to talk to me about my book. And I have to say, she's one of my favorite authors. That's the real reason that I wanted to speak with her. But she also, well, did one thing about her writing. She published, I believe her first book was Everything You Want Me to Be.
Number two.
That book, there's two books that I think of that have prologues that are phenomenal. One is Kent Kruger's prologue for Iron Lake, his first novel, a great prologue. I dare anybody to read that and not keep reading. That's how good it is. And I feel the same way about that first chapter in Everything You Want Me to Be. That is such a good opening for that book. And sometimes you see those every once in a while, but they're rare. And so congratulations for that. I've probably done 10 of the last 12 Minnesota Mystery Nights and really enjoyed them. Got to know a lot of authors I didn't know and enjoyed them. But one of the best Minnesota Mystery Nights was Mindy in conversation with Josh Moling. I don't know if any of you remember that. It was a really good, I see some of you are nodding your heads. I'm hoping she can do the same thing tonight. Anyway, I really enjoyed that. And just to reiterate what Rob was saying, her debut novel, her next novel is coming out tomorrow. They're at a brew house in Edina. I'm sorry, what's the name? Wooden Hill Brewing in Edina at 7 o'clock. They're going to reprise the Josh Mindy show. It's going to be reversed. When you were here before, you were speaking to Josh about his latest book. Tomorrow, Josh is going to be talking to Mindy about her latest book. That, in my mind, is a can't-miss event, so you should put it on your calendar and go there. You can have a beer as well. We're going to talk about Rattlesnake Bluff tonight, but I did want to ask you a couple questions first about your novel.
We're not here to talk about me, Carrie.
Just two quick questions.
Okay.
The title, I'm kind of curious about the significance of the title, and I thought I read that this would be your last Iowa novel in mystery in the series, and I hope that's not the case because you and I both have Iowa in our blood and feel like it's a much maligned, misunderstood place. So I hope that's not the case. No, it is.
This is going to be book three that's coming out tomorrow, and I am under contract for four, so there's going to be at least one more, and I'm working on book four right now. The title, The Whisper Place, actually comes from a scene in the prologue. There's a woman who is trying to escape her past, and she buys a map from a gas station turnstile and is looking at the map, and she's drawn to the places that are written so light that it looks like they're whispered on the page. And so she's looking for her own whisper place.
Ah, nice yeah. Title.
Can we start talking about you now?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's do that.
Great. Well, yes, thank you for everybody for coming out tonight. I was so thrilled when you asked me if I would be in conversation with you because I have loved the Sam Rivers series, and being able to just dive into book five with you was a treat. And also, you know, 18 months in advance, that's because Rob plans this night more than I've planned anything in my entire life. You know, I mean, he was the one who set this up a year and a half ago for us. So that's why we're here. I want to do a quick poll first. Who has read any Kerry Griffith book? Raise your hand if you are a Kerry Griffith reader. Excellent. Okay. Who's read the Sam Rivers series? Who's read his fiction? Okay. And nonfiction readers? Anybody read the non? Okay. All right. So more of the fiction. All right. Well, good. That's what we're talking about tonight. So I'm going to start out talking about Rattlesnake Bluff, and then we'll maybe get into some more general writing questions. We're going to go into a lightning round, and then at the very end, we're going to play a game. And after that, we will do an audience Q&A. So if you have questions for Carrie, keep them in your mind, because we will have a little time for that at the end. Okay, so this is book five. Did you imagine this was going to be a five-book series when you started writing Wolfkill?
Well, my intention was always to write one book a year.
Okay.
And I've pretty much done that. In fact, I just delivered the sixth Grizzling Arrows to the publisher that will be out next June. So I've been pretty much on pace. I want to put out one novel a year, one mystery, Sam Rivers mystery a year, and a nonfiction book every other year.
Grizzly Narrows?
Yeah, we don't have grizzly. All my books are set in Minnesota, nonfiction and fiction. We don't have grizzlies in Minnesota, but Sam Rivers remembers an incident from his early career out in Alberta. At a place called Grizzly Narrows. Most of the novel takes place in northeastern Minnesota, and that experience that he had in Grizzly Narrows is reprised up in northeastern Minnesota today.
Okay. So we're not focusing on grizzly bears, or are we?
No, not really, but the grizzly is what gets Sam Rivers into the story.
Sure, of course. Yeah. Okay, oh, that's exciting. And so that's going to be out. This Rattlesnake Bluff came out in June of this year.
Yes.
So Are we going to look forward to Grizzly Narrows next June, then?
Yep, next June.
Excellent. Yeah,
every one of them have been published in June.
Perfect. Oh, good. So did you see this as a long-running series? I know you said you wanted to do a book a year. Did you always know it was going to be a Sam Rivers book?
I did. You know, Sam Rivers is a special agent with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. People might not know this, but we in Minnesota have a list of threatened and endangered species. And usually Sam gets involved in something because in some way, shape, or form, a species, an endangered or threatened species, has been used in the perpetration of a crime. Mm-hmm. And so that list is long. So there's lots of options for it.
It's true. We can go for a long time with Sam.
Yes, yeah.
And every time I get to enjoy a Sam Rivers mystery, I'm always reminded of CJ Box's Joe Pickett, who's a Wyoming game warden. How did you choose a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service special agent to be your protagonist? It is such a unique choice for a crime fiction investigator.
Yeah, you know, these books that I write are outdoors or wilderness mysteries, and they, you know, there's a whole subgenre. In fact, I kind of think of Kent Kruger's Cork O'Connor. He's a private investigator, mm-hmm. but lots of his stuff happens in the wilderness. C.J. Box, Nevada Bar, has Anna Pigeon. Pam Beeson has a Weston. Sam Weston, Samantha Weston, is a reporter, but she's always in wild places. I've always been interested in wilderness, so I knew I always wanted to write books, mysteries that featured some aspect of the wilderness. And I was always interested in species, especially threatened and endangered species. So I was always interested in featuring some sort of species as an entree for Sam to get involved. Now, Sam, as a special agent for USFW, one of his mandates is to police the threatened and endangered species list and make sure these animals that are on the list don't go extinct. And so that's always usually an entree into murder and mayhem.
We'll be back for more Masters of Mystery after a word from our sponsors.
It's no mystery where you find the best munchies. It's under the Old Dutch windmill at your favorite snack store. For over 90 years, Old Dutch Foods has proudly delivered taste sensations to families throughout the Midwest. Old Dutch is a Minnesota-made, family-owned company committed to quality and flavor that brings everyone together. Whether you're enjoying a gathering with loved ones or reading your favorite mystery, Old Dutch snacks make every moment special. Join us in celebrating the flavors that have delighted loyal fans for generations. Old Dutch. Quality lives here.
Welcome back, sleuths and savants. It's time to rejoin Masters of Mystery.
Sam's also embarking on a pretty important change in his life in Book 5 in Rattlesnake Bluff. How has the character evolved over the course of the series?
If you meet Sam Rivers in Wolfkill, if you think about him romantically, his romantic life, he's got a girlfriend by the name of Diane Talbot. She's his on-again, off-again girlfriend through Cougar Claw, the next one. But in Cougar Claw, his wolf-dog hybrid sidekick by the name of Gray gets shot and taken to an all-night vet clinic. And there, Sam doesn't know it yet, but he meets Carmel Rodriguez, who becomes the love of his life in the third book, Dead Catch. He's trying to figure out how to ask her to marry him, really uncertain whether or not she'll say yes. And by the end of the novel, that's sort of a sub-theme in the novel. By the end of the novel, he asks her, and she sure enough says yes. And in Rattlesnake Bluff, they're doing what a lot of psychologists think is the first real test of marriage, and that is managing your wedding details. Now, Sam is not very good at this.
I'm glad you said it. It's not his strong suit.
It's not his strong suit. But back to the dynamic character, Sam will continue to evolve. There's another significant life event in Grizzly Narrows that happens too.
So you featured wolves, cougars, monarch butterflies, and walleye in previous Sam Rivers novels. What drew you to rattlesnakes for this book?
They're scary, they're venomous, they're killers. They also happen to be on the Minnesota endangered species list. Timber rattlesnakes are threatened. The eastern Massasauga rattlesnake is endangered because it hasn't really been seen in the state in 2 decades. In the story, one appears in this bluff, this development site down east of about 20 miles east of Rochester, Minnesota, in bluff country. And that's very mysterious, and that's how Sam gets involved. And then murders and mayhem ensue.
Yeah, it's a great setup because the snake, it doesn't just appear in the prairie, you know, doing its snake thing. It's on like the seat of a bobcat, you know, for the construction company. So the worker, Jules, opens the door. He's going to get to work, and there's a rattlesnake sitting where he's supposed to jump in. So it's very intriguing immediately how this snake got to where it is.
Yeah.
I'm not a snake fan, I have to say. I saw someone on Instagram call them danger noodles, and I was like, that feels accurate. That's a more accurate name than snake, I think. And I usually read before bed, so I'm reading your book at night about all of these snakes, and then I'm like, oh, checking under my covers, checking under the bed, looking at all the... I'm like, okay, all right, no snakes. Okay, I can go to bed. But it'll keep you up. It'll definitely keep you reading.
Good.
So the setting, let's talk a bit about that. Rattlesnake Bluff is set in the Driftless region of Minnesota, which is, it's a region that's very dear to my heart. All 4 of my grandparents farmed in that region of Minnesota their whole lives.
Oh, wow.
What led you to set the book there?
Well, the eastern Massasauga rattlesnake and timber rattlesnake, that's where they are in Minnesota. So I kind of had to go there. But, you know, the Driftless area in southeastern Minnesota is really special. I mean, it's an area that the glaciers missed. It has limestone substrate. It has a lot of crevices, lots of wild caves down in southeastern Minnesota. There's a lot of places where you can bury secrets, and some secrets are buried down there in this novel. So I love that country, too. It's beautiful country with trout streams and beautiful vistas and deciduous forests. Mm-hmm. And I always like setting it in an area that I think is really beautiful. And we are blessed in Minnesota with such great places to set some of these books.
Will Sam always be in Minnesota, do you think? I mean...
He'll have this Grizzly Narrows talks about an experience he had up in Alberta. Mm-hmm. And there'll be asides like that. But yeah, I plan on having all the books be in Minnesota.
Excellent. Yeah. Would you be willing to read? I know you've got a passage or two selected, just to give us a taste of the book.
Sure. This is from chapter one. This is really introduces the Driftless area and sort of gives you a feel for why Sam Rivers really likes the Driftless area. Julio Vargas Ortega loved Minnesota's Driftless. Ever since he was a young boy, Julio jewels to his friends and colleagues, rose before dawn. Even with the windows shut to birdsong and the blinds pulled, Jules could feel first light. Didn't matter if the previous evening he'd been out past midnight at a tequila fest, doing the marimba two-step, hoping to snag a partner, beating out a rhythm all his own. When the eastern horizon grew pale, Jules shuffled into his galley kitchen to brew coffee, his tidy whities tented by his tumescence and the hope for better luck getting a girlfriend ahead. At 27, Jules liked his coffee black. He was 5'8", built stout and thick-muscled with jet-black hair and a tan patina he claimed was from his mother, Esmeralda, who was one-quarter Mayan. Apart from a taste for occasional tequila, Jules lived clean. And even though Jules missed his mother, there wasn't a morning that passed without Jules feeling lucky he lived in southeastern Minnesota's bluff country. He stared at the kitchen calendar, admiring the photograph. It was a morning shot in July in Bluff Country, looking out across the only place in Minnesota that escaped the Ice Age glaciers. The Driftless extended from southeast Minnesota into southwestern Wisconsin and northeastern Iowa. It featured green land undulating and sweeping ridges all the way to the horizon. In the calendar photo taken east of Rochester, Minnesota, the mists hung over the verdure like the treetops of an Amazonian rainforest. Today was Tuesday, July 11th. He had always believed Tuesdays were the most productive day of his week. Similar to his instinctual sense of first light, he felt certain today was going to bring something special.
And it did.
And if I can read one more section that has to do with the rattlesnakes, this introduces the rattlesnakes. And here we go. Now, Jules has been appointed foreman of a new development site called Alta Vista that is on a beautiful bluff overlooking a rural area near a small town, a fictitious town called Owens Gap. Jules has been told by his boss, Leslie, he needs to clear off an area so that investors that are coming at noon can see how beautiful the area is, and they'll be interested in investing in this development site called Alta Vista. So he comes in, he finds a rattlesnake on the chair of his bobcat, and he remembers rattlesnakes from his childhood, from being in south of the border. In northern Mexico and Texas, rattlesnakes were commonplace. There were several kinds, all of them easily recognized. When he was young, he and a friend had killed a 4-foot timber rattler, skinned it, and roasted some of its meat over a fire. It smelled good over the flames. They'd taken a few bites, the flavor a cross between frog legs and turtle. A little gamey, but tasty. And filling for a couple of kids who seldom had enough to eat. Then they tossed the entire carcass, less its head, where the venom was stored, to the hogs. When Jules' mother found out, her eyes turned fearful, then angry. Esmeralda's Mayan heritage always made her think a little differently, especially about things in nature. Whenever she encountered snakes, any snakes, but especially rattlesnakes, it was an omen. No good comes from killing Colquicán, Esmeralda said. Killing any snake. Colcacan was the Mayan serpent guide, bringer of rain and sun, the intermediary between the living and the dead. Esmeralda instructed them about giving the rattler a wide berth or using a long stick to shoo it out of their path. They should never kill it. But this snake was on the front seat of his cat, and Jules needed to get on with his Tuesday morning. He needed to get that tree line cleared by 11 so Leslie could show her client the view. The rattlesnake wasn't moving. The inside of the cat was cool, so even though the snake had rattled, it wasn't ready to slither away anytime soon. Jules couldn't imagine how it had gotten into the cat, or why, for that matter, probably following a rat, he guessed, though none of that made any difference. He fetched a long-handled shovel from the cargo hold of his truck and returned to the flatbed. When the snake saw the shovel blade, it made a quick rattle. Jules said a prayer for his mother. Then he brought the metal down flat and hard, whacking the reptile. It writhed and rattled, and he struck it again twice. Then it stopped. Jules had encountered lots of rattlesnakes, but he had never seen a rattler like this one. It was covered with beautiful dark brown splotches. There was a pattern to the splotches, along the top of the back and around the sides. The top splotches were the largest, separated by tan skin. Its head was in the shape of an arrow point. He watched it for a full minute, making sure it was dead. He regretted killing such a beautiful creature. He recalled the scolding he'd gotten from his mom. She was always using herbs not only to spice their food, but also for native rituals she remembered from childhood. After the boys had killed the rattlesnake, eaten part of it, and thrown the rest to the hogs, she'd pulled down a bundle of dried sage. Then she made the boys go out to the livestock tank and wash their hands and faces. When they were finished, she lit the dried sage and waved the smoke around their heads, hands, and upper body, saying some kind of incantation Jules had never heard before, to cleanse them. Jules wished his mother were here to help him. But this morning, Jules didn't have time for a ritual. Jules was a foreman, and he needed to get into his bobcat and use its front loader to plow up the bush edge, then cut the last part by hand. The boss needed her view. Once he was certain the snake was dead, he used the shovel blade to scoop it up. He dropped the snake on the road's shoulder, well away from his truck and trailer. Then he returned to the cat and checked it for more snakes. Not finding any, within 5 minutes he'd backed it off the trailer and was motoring to the bluff edge. He knew he'd clear a view for his boss well before 9. It was his job. But it was hard not to recall his mother's voice. Snakes are omens, Esmeralda said. No good comes from killing a snake.
We'll be back after a word from your local station.
Potato chips, kettle chips, ripple chips, or maybe popcorn, or puffcorn or pretzels. Old Dutch makes them and a whole lot more. Your snack cravings can be satisfied by grabbing a bag, box, or jar of your favorite at your favorite store. Just look for the Old Dutch Windmill. Old Dutch is a Minnesota-made, family-owned company committed to quality and flavor that brings everyone together. Whether you're enjoying a holiday gathering or lounging at the beach, Old Dutch snacks make every moment special. Old Dutch. Quality lives here.
Welcome back. It's time to rejoin Masters of Mystery.
I want to talk a little bit more general writing questions, writing process. How did you get started as a writer?
You know, I was a sophomore in college at the University of Iowa. I was walking late one night down Jefferson Avenue. You remember Iowa City. Great town. And I was bemoaning the fact that I had an assignment that I had to do that night. Now, this is a testament to liberal arts education. I was a biology major. I spent my childhood out in the woods and catching snakes, a lot of snakes and other critters, and I was really interested in biology. And so biology was a perfect degree for me, but I had to take an introduction to literature class. And so I took this class, and that night I had to read a short story, and I went home and I opened the book up and I read this short story. And, you know, we all have those moments in our lives that in retrospect are really significant. And that night I read a short story by Ernest Hemingway called Big Two-Hearted River, in which the main character, Nick Adams, is coming back from the war, and he's recovering by going fly fishing on the Big Two-Hearted River up in the Upper Peninsula. And I was so profoundly moved by that story that it just, I came away from that thinking, how did that guy do this? Now, I'm a little embarrassed about Ernest Hemingway. I love his work. I've read all of his work, but if anybody's seen the Ken Burns special on Ernest Hemingway, he wasn't a great guy.
Not the best human.
But I really love that story. It got me interested in writing, and I've pretty much been writing ever since.
Wow. Wow. So one introduction to literature course.
One,
changed
yeah.
Changed your life.
Yeah. Liberal arts education.
That's amazing. I love that. Biology has still found a way into your work.
Yes,
I mean,
yeah.
We've already touched on it a bit, but in your nonfiction as well, you focus on borderlands and wilderness. And it's a theme through your fiction, obviously, with Sam Rithers. So what draws you to those topics in writing?
Well, the wilderness stuff, I'm always interested in survival stories. I'm really interested in, you know, we urbanites tend to lose touch with genuine wilderness, which can be really dangerous. And many instances, I've had close calls. A buddy of mine who happens to be here tonight, he and I got lost with our kids when they were really young up on a trail. Yeah, this kid survived. So did mine.
One of them made it back.
And it struck me that if we can get lost, and we spend a lot of time in the woods hiking and stuff, it could happen to anybody. So my first book was about two survival stories, true stories that happened up in the Boundary Waters, called Lost in the Wild. And I've always been drawn to the other books about Gunflint, are stories about the blowdown and about one of the biggest forest fires in Minnesota history. So there's a lot of drama there. There's also a lot of heroism that I like to point out.
So as every writer in the room knows, publishing can be kind of a wild industry. Can you talk about your path to publishing?
Yeah, I've been really fortunate. I have never had an agent, but I've always found really good publishers. The Minnesota Historical Society Press, University of Minnesota Press, they've published all my nonfiction books. And Adventure Keen, they're a big publisher, mostly of nature guides, but they were also interested in publishing some regional mysteries, and that's how I got introduced to them. And they have been just phenomenal to work with. They've been great.
And how did you find them? I mean, did you just read their guides,
well,
or you knew about
Mary
them?
Mary Logue, a fellow writer, that had a press release where they issued a press release and said, we're looking for some regional mysteries. And
call for submissions.
She forwarded. Yeah, it was a call for submissions, and I responded, and they published my first mystery.
Sounds like it's fate then. Yes.
Yeah. It's luck.
There's a lot of luck in our industry.
Yeah, there
That's
is.
True. So I have to ask the requisite craft question. You know, if you're a writer, you fall into one or two camps, and it's not nonfiction and fiction. It's not prose or poetry. It's plotters and pantsers. That's everybody knows what a plotter and a pantser is, right? The plotters plot. They write their outlines. They know what's going to happen in Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. And they sit down and they write that book. The pantsers, right by the seat of their pants, they just sit down and see what happens. So which one are you?
Oh, plotter. Definitely a plotter. Yes, yes.
Team plotter back
there. I have to say, though, I really write a 6 to 8 page single space treatment of the entire novel before I get started. While I'm writing, instances of inspiration might come to me, and I'll change the overall treatment. And may take a very different take from the original plot, but I definitely start from a plot first.
Did that happen in Rattlesnake Bluff?
Oh, yeah.
Things change on the page?
Every one of my novels, that happens. Grizzly Narrows, it happened. Rattlesnake Bluff, it happened, yeah.
Okay, so
you're... Rattlesnake Bluff was too slow at first. There were too many snakes, and I wanted more action. And so I had to go back and change it a little bit.
But... Wow, yeah, too many snakes. That's not a problem that ever happens in my work. What advice would you give to other writers, maybe writers in the room who are working on a book, or just in general?
I get asked this question a lot. I have one response: practice, practice, practice. Just write as much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Malcolm Gladwell had that book, Outliers, and he said, you become an expert at something, he theorized, after doing it 10,000 hours. Yeah, it's a long time. I'm sure you've passed the 10,000-hour mark. I think I did in 1997. I don't consider myself an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but it does give you a good experience writing, and that counts for a lot.
Okay, practice, practice, practice.
Practice, practice, practice.
And what is the best way for people to find out news about you? If they're excited about Grizzly Narrows, what's the best way to keep up with you?
Probably my website. But I post on Instagram and, but I post all the events that I've got coming up on my website.
And that's
CarrieGriffith.com.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. Well, we have made it to the lightning round. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Quick answer. Off the top of your head, favorite writing caffeine?
A strong black coffee, strong enough to stand up a spoon.
Oh, okay. Respectable, yeah. What is your preferred writing snack?
Strong black coffee, strong enough to stand up a spoon. I don't usually eat until 11 or 12, so I drink coffee and write.
Oh, that's your breakfast. Here's your manuscript. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
What's your go-to comfort read? Do you have a book that you go to for?
I like John Sanford's novels. I got to say, it's a sickness and an addiction, but I just think he's really funny. I mean, even though he talks about horrible things, but
I think there's worse addictions out there. Yeah.
I do too.
Who are your auto-buy authors? You don't even need to know what the book's about. You see they've got a new one coming, you're buying that book.
Okay, I have to say Kent Kruger. It's not so much his Cork O'Connor novels, but his non-Cork O'Connor novels. There's three of them out there. Every one of them have been phenomenal. This Tender Land is my favorite. Mm-hmm. They've all been really good. Whenever he puts one out, I look for it. And of course, Mindy Mejia.
Of course, yeah. What are you reading right now?
Right now I'm reading Cork O'Connor's Apostles Cove.
Okay, yep.
But I just finished Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. And
for the first time, right?
Well, yeah, no, that was time ago, but what a great novel.
Dogs or cats? Or rattlesnakes, I guess. You can choose rattlesnakes.
I'd say all three. You know, I'd love to have a rattlesnake, but that would never pass on the home front. But we've had dogs and we've had cats, and I've loved them all. They've been great.
All pets are good pets.
All animals are great.
Yeah.
You know.
Author you would travel back in time to meet?
Two. Jane Austen.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. She would be phenomenal. And Bill Shakespeare. I mean, we know nothing about William Shakespeare. Wouldn't you just like to hear him talk? Mm. I mean, is he really that brilliant and that incredible?
I'd love to go back and just blow his mind about, like, you have no idea how famous you're going to be forever.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
That's a good one. It'd be fun to bring Jane Austen forward, too. It'd be like, look what happens. Like,
yeah.
Things are going to get great.
Yeah. Oh,
you know?
She is such a good writer, too.
Yeah. What is your dream vacation?
Going down to the Amazon rainforest and, you know, going in a a nice boat down the Amazon.
Anacondas.
Anacondas, pink dolphins, yeah, all kinds of stuff.
This might be the same answer. What is Sam Rivers' dream vacation?
Well, he would probably, he'd go up into the Boundary Waters or some temperate forest wilderness area. I think he'd be more inclined to do that.
He's going north, you're going south.
Yep.
Yep, okay. Yeah. Bigfoot, fact or fiction?
Fiction.
Oh, okay.
Unless you're going to use him in a novel, then...
It's not, okay, if it's fact, if Bigfoot is fact in Sam Rivers' world, how would he track Bigfoot?
He'd be very suspicious. He wouldn't. He'd look at those tracks and think, somebody made these.
Okay, so he's going to bust the myth of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, good. You made it through the lightning round. Excellent.
Good.
We'll be back for more Masters of Mystery after a word from our sponsors.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Businesses across the state counting on $1.5 billion in federal funding are finding out it's not coming. The money had been approved to help pay for energy-saving projects, solar and wind development, technology innovation, and more. The Department of Energy is now reportedly canceling those awards. One group that is getting a boost in federal funding, AI data center developers. The new federal budget lets tech companies claim more upfront tax breaks on data center equipment, facilities, and production lines, and it appears to be working. Microsoft recently announced what it calls the world's most powerful AI data center planned for Mount Pleasant. But environmental groups warn unfettered AI development could cause lasting harm to our natural resources. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Here are a list of upcoming events in the Central Wisconsin area on Friday, October 31st. The Vesper Volunteer Fire Department is hosting a brat fry from 4 to 7:30 p.m., and the Vesper Recreation Committee will have games and treats from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. in the Community Center. The Beer and Fire Department will have trucks at the park from 5 to 7 p.m., and firefighters will hand out candy. Trunk or treat at the Wisconsin Rapids Elks Lodge, number 693, 3 until 6 p.m., with candy and food trucks. Don't forget to wear your costume. Followed by the Heartbeats Dance at the Elks Lodge from 6 p.m. until midnight. Trick or treat at McMillan Library, 4 to 5:30 p.m. Come in costumes, get treats at the service desks, and be sure to stop at the all-purpose room for a treat and to have your picture taken at the photo booth. Wisconsin Rapids Haunted Walkthrough event at the Wisconsin Rapids Police Department from 3 to 5 p.m. This free, spooky, family-friendly event is open to the community, offering a safe and fun way for kids and families to collect candy. Wishing you a safe and happy Halloween from WFHR and WIRI.
This one goes out to the elder millennials. We're not as flashy as those other millennials and not as grungy as Gen X, but our music deserves another listen. Burn Before Listening features hits, deep cuts, and some authentic cringe. This is how you remind. From 2000 to 2009, Burn Before Listening on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, Sundays at 9 p.m.
As seasons change and years fly by, one thing remains consistent: Old Dutch. For over 90 years, Old Dutch Foods has proudly delivered taste sensations to families throughout the Upper Midwest. Old Dutch is a Minnesota-made, family-owned company committed to quality and flavor that brings everyone together. Whether you're enjoying a gathering with loved ones or simply treating yourself, Old Dutch snacks make every moment special. Join us in celebrating the flavors that have delighted loyal fans for generations. Old Dutch. Quality lives here.
Welcome back. It's time to rejoin Masters of Mystery.
Last thing we're going to do here, we are going to play a game. This game is called Where the Wild Things Are. So you're going to have to guess. I'm going to describe a Minnesota predator, and you're going to have to guess the predator. I told my son I was making up this game, and he was like, predators of children? I was like, no. No, we're talking about animals, not monsters. So, no, these are friendly predators.
Okay.
This animal, which is Minnesota's most abundant large predator, hunts porcupines by flipping them over.
Wolves.
Oh, it's coyotes. Coyotes. Maybe wolves do too.
Oh, maybe they do. Yeah, I don't know.
What is the only animal that is unbothered by the striped skunk's defensive odor? While they don't have great noses, they can hear noises up to 10 miles away.
Can I call out to the
audience? Yeah, you can ask a friend. Yeah. Phone a friend.
Oh. Oh, jeez. And that's a predator?
Oh, we got... It is. It's a great horned owl. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Excellent.
Cindy, nice job.
Okay, which is the only member of the dog family that can climb trees? This animal is also thought to be the oldest canid species, originating 3.6 million years ago.
Black bear.
Oh, no, gray fox.
Oh.
I didn't even know foxes were in the dog family.
I didn't either.
What?
Flunking out here.
Okay, all right. That's okay. You got time to regroup. What fish, known as the water wolf, can grow over 4 feet long, weigh more than 50 pounds, and live to 20 years?
Northern pike.
Yes.
Ah!
Yes.
Woo-hoo! I got one.
This bird's nest can weigh over 2,000 pounds and are reused and enlarged every year.
Bald eagle.
Yes, we're on a roll now. This animal can store more than 100 pounds of food in its stomach, run 35 miles an hour, and easily swim 10 miles without stopping.
Gray wolf.
Oh. Anyone else? Moose?
What?
Moose, yes, moose. Or Bigfoot, yes. Yeah, both. Both are correct. All right, last one. This is for all the points. This reptile's name translates to Great River Mouth in the Ojibwe language.
It's a reptile?
And it also starred in Rattlesnake Bluff.
A rattlesnake?
Yes. Yeah, the Eastern Massasauga rattlesnake.
Oh, that's terrible. Okay, nobody tell anybody I missed that.
No, Carrie nailed that one, everybody.
Yeah,
Carrie
yeah,
got it.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. All right. What questions do we have from the audience? And we'll probably repeat them here so we can hear. Oh, you've got a mic. We've got a mic.
We're going to do it. When you have a question, raise your hand. We'll get a mic to you so we can get it on the radio.
Right here.
Which is more difficult and which is more fun to write, fiction or nonfiction?
Well, fiction is a lot easier to write just because you don't have to interview. For my latest nonfiction book, I interviewed more than 100 people. You have to transcribe it, talk to them, line them up, do all that kind of stuff. So it's harder to research, but it's pretty interesting too. Fiction, you can go to your dining room table or go to the coffee shop, make it all up in your head. You know how that goes, Jeff. It's an easier process, and so therefore, it's kind of a lot more fun. Though I love to write both. I really enjoy it.
That question, by the way, came from Jeff Burton, the former alumni, or an alumni of Minnesota Mystery Night, who writes about cadaver dogs, if you'll correct that. Any more questions, anybody?
This is your chance.
It's going. All right, let's give these two a great round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hello, this is your host, Rob Young, again. Before we end tonight's show, I'd like to take a moment to thank each of you listeners and each person who has attended the live version of Masters of Mystery. We have just completed our third year of putting on the live show. When we started, we had no idea if anyone would show up or if anyone would listen. But thanks to all of you, Mystery Night has been a resounding success. Despite the occasional night of horrendous weather and the surprise closing of our first venue, fans have continued to pack the house every month, bringing enthusiasm, a thirst for knowledge, and insightful questions. And the authors, what can I say? From our very first show in October 2022 featuring William Kent Krueger and Carl Birkins, through tonight's show, the authors who have graced us with their presence have been phenomenal, giving of their time, their wisdom, and their stories to educate, entertain, and enlighten us about their books, their writing, journeys, and their lives. About a year ago, we launched Masters of Mystery as a radio show, and now we are broadcast on 9 stations in 3 states, including this one. We have learned that broadcasting live can be a challenge. It's not always smooth or slick, and it seldom goes as planned. Sometimes it's humorous when we don't intend it, and other times it isn't when we want it to be. But in either event, it's real and authentic and heartfelt, and we sincerely hope you have enjoyed the show. We'll tell your friends and family. As we look ahead, the future looks bright. Our 2026 schedule includes 2 celebrated Chicago-based authors, Tracy Clark and Lori Rader Day. Craig Johnson, a Wyoming rancher and writer of the Great Walt Longmire series, will be here, as will Iowa Judge J.W. Barrows. Old friends David Housewright, Laura Childs, and Wendy Webb will be back, and there will be other notable authors making their Mystery Night debut. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the great group of conversation partners we have lined up. Guthrie Theater director Tracy Brigden, movie producer Patrick Coyle, poet Danny Klecko, comedian Lorna Landvik, and every Midwest writer's best friend, St. Paul Pioneer Press book editor Mary Ann Grossman, are among the people who will converse with our authors. And we've even started booking authors for 2027. William Kent Krueger will return, as will extremely popular Alan Eskins. Kyle Mills, who took over Vince Flynn's Mitch Rapp series after Flynn passed away, will be here, as will celebrated Colorado author Carter Wilson. As we continue to do our best to bring you the top mystery and thriller authors, not just from the Midwest, but from across the country and around the world. In addition to our future monthly gatherings with great authors and interesting people, we are broadening our scope. We expect our network of radio stations to grow as station managers and program directors become more familiar with what we do. We also have developed a working relationship with a cable television series called Writer's Corner, collaborating with its founder and director, Alan Miller, to share featured authors. Writer's Corner is broadcast on 36 local cable TV channels, and thus it provides another avenue by which authors can bring their work to the attention of readers. In turn, it allows Masters of Mystery to draw authors from a wider and wider area. Also in the works are a new gangster-era radio mystery drama called One-Eyed Jacks, a live call-in show focused on mysteries, both real and fictional, and a podcast that will be a mix of book club and book reviews to keep you up to date and on the most recent books from local and national authors. All of these programs are scheduled to roll out in 2026. To follow their progress and to keep track of everything about Mystery Night, simply go to our website, mnmysterynight.com. There are so many people to thank for our successful 3-year run, but none more so than Once Upon a Crime Bookstore in Minneapolis, one of our live event sponsors, who is a constant source of authors. Anytime you're in the Twin Cities, it's worth the stop at Once Upon a Crime to not only buy the newest mystery or thriller, but to look at their incredible historical archive of books from the likes of Ellery Queen, Agatha Christie, Dashiell Hammett, and Raymond Chandler, founders of the mystery writing genre. And also a big thanks to another sponsor, Twin City Sisters in Crime, an organization dedicated to the art and business of crime writing for the past 38 years. Finally, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the people at Old Dutch Foods, without whose sponsorship we couldn't have launched the radio experiment, and to all the local sponsors who bring Masters of Mysteries to your airwaves. But we've saved our biggest thanks till last, to you, the listeners, without whom we would be like the proverbial tree falling in the forest, with no one to hear. So thanks to you all, and until next time, support your local bookstore, read your local authors, and don't forget to tune in to Masters of Mystery.
That's all for tonight, folks. Thanks for joining Masters of Mystery, and please come back next month as we once again converse with some of the world's most celebrated mystery writers in our quest to understand the minds behind the murders. In the meantime, please support your local bookstores, and in particular, buy the books of these authors who have entertained us tonight. Until next time, take the time to hug your kids and read a good book. This is Rob Young signing off.
It's no mystery where you find the best munchies. It's under the Old Dutch Windmill at your favorite snack store. For over 90 years, Old Dutch Foods has proudly delivered taste sensations to families throughout the Midwest. Old Dutch is a Minnesota-made, family-owned company committed to quality and flavor that brings everyone together. Whether you're enjoying a gathering with loved ones or reading your favorite mystery, Old Dutch snacks make every moment special. Join us in celebrating the flavors that have delighted loyal fans for generations. Old Dutch. Quality lives here.
Now, as the fog drifts over the moors and cobblestones gleam under the rain-washed lamplight, our guest authors take their final bows. The cases are closed. The curtain falls. This has been Masters of Mystery, brought to you by Old Dutch Foods. Signing off until next month, when we will once again dissect the minds behind the murders. Good night and pleasant dreams.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
Hear that? That's the sound of your life. Perfectly imperfect. Beating in rhythm to the world you've created. But every time you drive after drinking, the music gets drowned out. Your life sounds pretty great. Don't let a buzz ruin it. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Don't drive buzzed. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious. 1 in 10 kids vape serious. Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate,
they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
Don't miss any of the stories that impact your life. Catch WFHR's News Roundup in the podcast form. Go to WFHR.com to subscribe.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Matt Piper. Airports across the country reported dozens of incidents of air traffic controller shortages this weekend, and Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy tells Fox it'll only get worse as they're forced to work without getting paid.
I see that burn coming from the controllers, and I think it's going to play out as we look forward into the coming days.
More on the shutdown and those who rely on government assistance from correspondent Elise Preston.
Cars lined up in Pontiac, Michigan, trunks open.
It's helping us out a lot. We need this food.
If the government shutdown continues, there will be less food out there.
Christopher Ivey works with Forgotten Harvest, which collects surplus food and delivers it to hungry people.
We're going to really have to lean into the community support that we need to be able to help us get through this difficult time.
Nearly 13% of people in Michigan rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. They're among the